This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast number 323. You had me at nuts to the face.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming tech gadget anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And we are joined today by a very special guest, although I almost hate calling him a guest because
he's
like
totally family now.
At this point, Xenocore from Ultimate Quest. I know you've been popping in on RP Grinders.
Sometimes he'll come for a visit.
Yeah, for visit. I mean, dude, you're like all around the place.
Well, you know, when you don't have a show of your own, you got to keep your face in the know. So, you know, you got to bogart other people's stuff and show your face and make sure people remember you for what you are.
Exactly. You don't want your name to be
forgotten. It's an old school gamer that's too freaking old for all these new people who want all these easy games. <It's a bastard. laughs>
I only have 10 fingers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so. Yeah, so.
Yep. So I'm bringing some extra special goodness for the show today. So here I am, and I'm going to be repping some other reviews for you guys today.
Yay! We love when Xeno's in the neighborhood.
He always comes overly prepared, which makes us look more prepared than normal.
Yeah, because I'm...
Well, I don't do the show weekly, so I have...
No, but you make up for, like, usually the week before, I'm kind of slacking, but I mean, we've been pretty consistent.
We've been very consistent so far this year.
So this is an added bonus.
Yeah, you guys are damn near professional already. All you need is like one good sponsor, and you guys are taking off all by yourself.
You know, we're getting there.
Dear Santa keeps getting my letters, and he just doesn't do anything about sponsorship.
Oh, that's because you weren't a good girl.
I tried.
That's part of the deal. You have to be a good girl in order for Santa to deliver.
I try, dude.
Okay, 90% does not get us a sponsor.
I'm now in the morally gray. I've come up from that dark gray. Now
yeah,
I'm like that lighter.
I know.
Like,
but
graphite
you're still
gray.
In the middle. You need to be top rung.
There needs to be a reward system for progressively getting better.
There was a reward system. You got a job.
True.
Next step
I wasn't
up, sponsor.
Wasn't thinking that. Anyway.
Okay, moving right along. I know that we've been talking a lot about games.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of our staples.
I mean, it is one of our staples, but, you know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, games and for the last couple of shows. You know, we were really pimping our holiday gift guide, which, you know, it's still out there. So while we're past the holidays, if you didn't get the gift you wanted, you can still check out the gift guide and be like, this is what I wanted.
You can give gifts not just for Christmas.
I mean, you can give a gift there any day. There's 365 days of gift giving.
It could just be like random give a gift to an awesome person day.
We should invent a holiday called It's Wednesday, Here's a Game Day.
Oh my god. That would be a great day.
I would love for someone to celebrate that holiday with me. As in giving me games on Wednesdays. That would be so awesome.
You know how I know it's time to give a game? Because it's Wednesday.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, just time it
and
really nice.
And I got
nice.
My business socks on, so.
Business socks. But we do say that we're a girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast.
Yes.
We should, you know, talk about anime because there's been a bunch of developments on the anime front.
Indeed.
I mean, you know, you now have the ability to have the Anime Network app on your iOS or Android device. So if your cable provider doesn't have or offer the Anime Network, you can do a subscription fee digitally to get access to all of the shows that are currently airing on the Anime Network on your iOS or Android device. So there's a huge chunk of licensed stuff that's available. And what I like about Anime Network is that you can get stuff, for the most part, just about every series that is streaming is offered either subbed or dubbed.
Ooh, I
which
like
is
the
cool.
option.
So you get the option, and I like that a lot. And there's a lot of series that I've never heard about that are available there, so I'm checking out some new ones. and they also have some feature-length films that are there. Funimation now has their native app for Android and iOS, so you can get all of the stuff that they've licensed available streaming, take it with you wherever you go. Not to mention you've got Crunchyroll as a streaming service, and it now has a native app that's available not only on iOS and Android, but also on the Xbox 360 and the PS3. And I think the Crunchyroll app is coming to the Wii U, but it's not available yet.
It's coming. We all know it's coming.
You know, and so there's a lot of opportunity for watching more anime that probably isn't going to be necessarily licensed in disc form be brought over to the U.S. But it's really exciting to me to see that there are so many outlets now for anime, even though mainstream pretty much has said that the anime rush is over. I disagree. You know, Anime LA is going on right now. And, you know, the cosplay is as prevalent as ever. So it's really cool for me to know that, you know, one of the things that Zeno's bringing to the show today is anime-related. And it's a series I think that you've actually checked out as well, Panda.
Yep, fairly recently.
And it's one of the ones that I watched, like, one episode of. And I was going to go back to it. And then I discovered some other anime streaming things. And now I've just been watching, like, I'm in the middle of, like, 8 series at the same time.
I don't know how you can do that.
Which is kind of new for me.
Yeah.
And, frankly, I'm proud of myself. Well, not gonna lie.
You definitely should be. I can't watch more than 2 at a time.
No. I'm
feeling lost.
I'm exaggerating, but I finished Auron High. I'm in the middle of... I finished H2O last night, which is the one that I'm going to talk about. I finished the second arc of Sword Art last week. I'm in the middle of Blast Tempest and Quasar the Stigmata, which has turned out is really very hentai, so I don't know if I'm going to finish it.
I don't think you should.
I don't think I'm going to finish it.
Hentai's never scared you guys before.
No, hentai has never scared Panda.
Yeah.
Let's clarify that. It doesn't scare Panda.
Been there, done there, seen it.
Yeah,
it went where? Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, like, Queen's Blade is just stupid, so I don't really like...
I don't even consider Queen's Blade a hentai.
I really don't. It's just...
Yeah, it's more of a fan service.
Yeah, it really is.
Fan service, and it's just too much.
But this one is definitely... I tried to give it one more episode just to make sure that, like, okay, well, if all we're going to do is, like, you know, fan service, boob exposed and butt exposed and underwear, like, I'm okay with that. And I'm like, if that's all we're going to go...
See, but then they throw over symbolism. Like, hey, this girl wears a snake for panties. Oh, this chick of the second season has a giant rhino horn, and it's supposed to be symbolic of the fact that she's a hermaphrodite and has a dick.
It's not symbolic. She has a dick. And in Quasar... It's just the way that the sexualized stuff is, like, dropped out is... No, it's just... There's ways of working in the sexual stuff as part of something that has to happen in order for someone to get what they need.
Fan service for the development of the character you don't have a problem with, but...
Fan service, just for fan service, I'm okay with. But when it's just so over the top that you can't...
Fan service is,
you can't even link it really, but you're trying... It's just like you're trying too hard. Just either own up to the fact that you just want to put out some naked chicks and boobs and stuff happening to these chicks. Just be honest with that's
Why
what you want
to
do.
Why does just happen to girls?
Because none of these guys stream yaoi.
They need to start streaming some yaoi.
I mean, the closest that you got was Mirage
and
of Blades.
And yaoi is so much more in-depth and like introspective. And very, it's lady porn. Yaoi is complete and utter lady porn.
No kidding. So, Quasar I was watching, and finally I just got to the point where they introduced a lowly character, and I was like, this is not going to go well. And I watched the episode, I'm like, yep, I was right. So I don't know that I'm going to watch any more of it.
I don't think you should.
But I finished School Days. I'm in
the... Oh, God. You watched
Yeah, I did. I went through School Days.
We talking Spike Lee or anime?
Anime.
Okay.
Although I do own School Day Spike Lee, and I made Panda watch it.
Yep, I did.
She had some more black points that day. But, I'm also, what else am I watching? I'm in the middle of Say I Love You, which I really enjoy.
It's really cute. I've watched all of it.
I am in the, I just started another one, and I don't know its English name, so I'm not even going to try it, but it's a slice of life anime, so I finished a couple of the ones that, you know, I was, like, very close to being in the middle of, but I have to say, for the most part, it's been really refreshing to have so much new anime, and Batum is one of the series that I was going to come back and watch, and so...
You need to get on that,
I definitely want to hear what you guys have to say about it, because from the first episode, I was like, this seems like it'll probably be a series that'll definitely be my kind of thing.
I mean, before we even touch on Batuma, I'm just going to say this. I know for the last few years, I've really been in the search for quality pieces of anime because we got to the bottom of the barrel. We got all that fermented crap that really just didn't do anything. And I think now there's a new cask of awesome anime out there. And I have not been so worried this year. I mean, granted, we just started the new year, but 2012 near the end into 2013 has really revitalized my sense of there are people out there who understand what we want to see, and now they're presenting it in a way that is new and inviting for people like me who are so used to being able to pinpoint what's going to happen when and how frequent. But let's talk a little bit about Batum. So, Xena, I'm totally going to let you start, and I'm going to chime in affectionately, because that's what I do
because
best.
Because that's what a good host does.
Yeah.
Is you let your guest lead the way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so I could take the first hit.
By all means.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All righty. Well, all right, so here we go. Batum. This one is, if I got to sum it up, it's more of a, well, it is a death game. That's the main premise of this game, is the death game. The main protagonist is a character named Ryota Sakamoto. He's around 22 years old. He's pretty much a shut-in at home. He's graduated from school, and he's worked on a beta for a game, online game called Batum, which is basically just a deathmatch game, like a battle arena game, similar to League of Legends and Dota and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just using bombs to kill other opponents. And he tested this game for a while, and he's trying to get a job in there. But, of course, they keep delaying it. You know, it's like, can you hold on for a little bit longer so we can hire some more people? You know, that'd be great. You know, that type of treatment.
Yeah.
So, and he's kind of emo about it. His mom's trying to encourage him to get other jobs, you know, with his family members. They run a grocery. He's like, no, I already got my eyes on a job. I don't need to wait on that one. Know, that type of treatment. So he's kind of harsh to his mom, you know, almost like if you the stereotypical picture of what an Asperger's person would react to whenever they want to do somebody tells them to do something they really not in the mood to do. You know, the stereotypical reaction is pretty much what he is.
Mm-hmm. But hardline, really aggressive.
I mean, he's a neat, which if you've watched Eden of the East, they give you a really good definition of exactly what a neat is. A recluse at home, not really motivated to do the normal, live the normal life.
Handed in air quotes there.
Yeah, air quotes for those who can't tell when I'm air quoting, because I often go slower.
He's not a complete shut-in as in the game. He's completely open and everybody knows him. He's actually one of the 10 best players in the world at this game and number one in Japan. So he's quite a celebrity online. But sooner or later, you zone out into him hanging in a chute that is caught on a deserted island in some trees suspended above the ground. And he doesn't remember how he got there, this, that, the other thing. Cue the character with no memory type thing. But sooner or later, you realize that he's been put into a real-life version of the online game that he's pro at, Batum. He wakes up with 8 bombs of the timer-based bombs on a satchel that's next to him. And he bumps into another person that's basically throwing contact bombs at him, like almost immediately after he gets out of the forest.
I think they're those are bursters. They're calling them like clusters, but
crackers.
Crackers, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So he's got timer bombs. The other guy's got crackers and is dead set on blowing the hell out of him. Apparently, the game that he's a member of started, I'd say, about an hour after he got on. So this guy's already got one or two players killed and has harvested a crystal that's embedded in their hands that works sort of like a radar, just like in the game. And you can only remove it either surgically or by killing the other person, it drops out. And if they collect 8, they can get off the island. So the players are encouraged to kill each other to get this stuff, which is where the whole death game thing and all the psychological drama comes from.
Right.
He also bumps into some people who are trying to be civilized and not play the game. There's some people who are playing, are killing people just because they like it. Other people are just doing what they feel they need to, but of course those guys are not important to the plot, and the plot monster eats them or blows them up or this, that, the other thing. So
yes, that's very true.
Yeah, the plot monster is running wild in this one. There's tons of no-name characters for the protagonist and antagonist to deal with. But it gets really serious really quick. It also gets into the heavy tropes as well. Like, really early, like, within the first three episodes, there's a lot of tropes. There's the, you know, hot girl can't escape the men scenarios. Like, she's the only one.
She's rape bait for every man, so she swears to not be fooled by men. And they revisit that later on in the series, outside of introducing the female character.
Yeah, too. her name is Himiko, and she actually knows Sakamoto in real life. Well, not in real life, but virtually, because they were partners for some time in the game. But
they get married. They have like a big wedding ceremony, and
a big fake marriage within the game. It's like, really, guys?
Where people get married in the game.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's like, for the type of game they're doing, it's not like an MMO or anything else like Sword Art was. You know, it's just an online arena game, and like, marriage, really?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll roll with it. The plot demands it, so okay. But so they end up teaming up eventually after they work through their issues. There's another person, Tyra, who's just a office manager, who gets thrown on the island, but he's really not a gamer per se. He's just trying to survive and do what he can to get off the island, and he wants to work together with those guys. And those are the three for the first 12 episodes that are released. Hopefully they do more. Those are the three main,
they're like a team.
Yeah. They decide to team up to try to get off.
Well, I mean, I know Himiko for a while was like, I'm not really going to help you, but I'm going to kind of stick around, you know, because everyone else I've ever managed to be around has tried to rape me.
I mean, that's a good reason to hang around somebody. At least you're not the rapey kind.
Well, that's the thing. At first, you know, when she meets Sakamoto, you know, and he's got these weird these tendencies. Like, he's starting to see similarities between Himiko, and he thinks it's the one from the game. And for a while, when he finally starts piecing it together, she's, like, refusing to admit that she is her. And, you know, but she kind of sticks around because, oh, I could trust him. Because she trusted him completely in the game. There was never, you know, a moment where she doubted him. So, I mean, and so far, you know, he's been very respectful because, in a weird way, he really does care for her and love her.
Yeah, he actually helped train her. Like, initially, she was just hanging out in the game. Then she started playing with him. Then they became a team, you know. And, yeah, so there's an inherent trust between the two. So,
even though it's never outwardly discussed, because if you asked her, she'd be like, no, I don't trust you. You're a man. What's really interesting in the whole series is that is the reason why these people have been thrown into this island and thrown into this game and have to figure it out. And the reason for that is they all got nominated from someone in real life who wanted them to just disappear. Because everyone's got a serious dark spot in their lives. Like with Sakamoto, you know, neglectful to his parents, and his mom is kind of decrepit, like she's weakening, and she just wants him to provide for himself. He's an adult now, and he's utterly refusing to do it. And his mother nominated him for the selection, and he's slowly getting pieces of that because something happens before he gets dropped onto the island that kind of messes with his mind a little bit. And I don't want to really go into that because it plays into a whole lot of him coming to terms with the fact that he wasn't such a nice person in reality. Himiko also, I feel kind of bad for her because her situation isn't necessarily that she was being a dick. Just the situation as it unfolded just put her in that place.
Yeah, it's more like she's suffering from survivor guilt.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the other people who did not survive, quote unquote, are punishing her for
her. Yeah. You know, and she's being confronted by that same threat on the island, which is why she's like, I'm so against men, I can't trust men, blah, blah, blah.
Men.
But literally everyone has been sent there because they've done some type of wrong to somebody in their lives.
That they nominate them. So it's a hell girl kind of...
Yeah, your grievance is avenged type of deal.
Right.
And the whole point of the death game is if you collect, I believe it's, is it seven or eight?
Yeah, eight total. So eight. Seven so of those other gems, players those plus your own.
If you collect eight of them, you get removed from the game. And Sakamoto for most of the series is really not trying to play it. Like, I mean, he does, you know, win his first battle against the cracker guy, but it was really out of self-defense. He wasn't aiming to do it. And there are some people who really do enjoy just killing because they're not even playing the game to get off the island. They just enjoy the slaughter. And some of them are really psychotic.
Yeah, it's like you could insert many tropes. Like there's the lawyer, the veteran, the psychopath. Yeah. Who's a child, by the way.
Yeah, but, the child is a psychopath.
But he has good reason to be a psychopath, consider where he came from.
Yeah, oh God, but, yeah, his he's dad a gets put on the island. It's kind of a mess. But
yeah.
I really like how, you know, you want to root for your protagonist, even though you know he's not a pristine hero. Because they're all there for a reason. There's
right.
something about everyone on the island. There's no...
They earn their spot on the island.
There's no innocent, really. I mean, if you really wanted to kind of go there, I guess Himiko is the most innocent that we've experienced. Because it's not like she outwardly did something to land there. But still, she's probably the only. And that might even be another thing that they really are going to discuss in the second season. Because I do think they're going to make another 12.
Yeah, I really hope so because I want to see.
Yeah, because the way they ended it, it's way too open ended. So I think they're leaving it open for them to reinvest because there's so much that is now being teased. Or I'd want to say it starts getting teased around episode 9 through 12. They start throwing more and more exposition, and you know, you start seeing less of the N character roaming around, just random dead bodies that really don't have anything to do with the story. And they start looking inward at the few characters that we are beginning to see. And it's really, like, it's just captivating. And, you know, it's all strategic. And I really wish I could play these types of games. Like, I do not have a strategic mind. So I'm like, I could never think to, like, set traps. And I'm the person who runs in and then gets blown up. And I'm like, why did you throw a grenade at me? and this game is like, oh, I should totally do that. You know, like, flank, have somebody go in this. I'm like, they throw all that at you at the same time, but you don't feel burdened by it. Like, mm-hmm. it's such a good series. And I think everyone should watch it. Or at least watch the first three episodes. And if you can't get hooked by episode three, then it's not for you.
Yeah, but which can be found on who Crunchyroll.
Hasn't liked the series.
Yeah. Which can be found on Crunchyroll.com. The first 12 are open for free users.
And I think the first six episodes are available on Hulu Plus.
Yeah, the first six are on Hulu Plus. All 12 are on Crunchyroll. And I think it's on... I can't remember if it's on the Funimation app
I think they're streaming it on Funimation,
Yeah, too. I think they're streaming it on Funimation as well. So there's a lot of opportunity to watch it. I guess
the art quality is quite good, too. I mean, this is being done by Madhouse, so, you know, they're putting some budget towards it. So.
Now, my thing is, what first drew you to Bertoom? Because I feel like it's just in looking at the art and reading the synopsis, there's a certain kind of person that would go, yeah, I'm going to turn this on right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it was the idea of a player having to play a game he's good at for real. And I've been playing a lot of League of Legends lately, so it just immediately grabbed me once I read the plot synopsis. It's like, oh, let me check this out, see what's happening. Because I've gotten to that point, at least I'm not exactly a pro player, but I know enough about League of Legends to where when people start picking certain characters, like, oh, I should probably pick this to fill out my team so we stand a chance of winning, you know, that type of thing. So, and plus this character does the same thing. It's like once it's do or die, he just reverts back to his gamer tendencies.
Yeah, he even talks about it. He's like, I have this self that I just, he can watch himself, like, and navigate. And he always succeeds. But then he comes out and he's like, oh my God, this game is real.
Well, like, let's not say he succeeds, but he comes out alive.
He comes out barely scathed or only minimally hurt in some cases. But it's really interesting to watch because everyone's going to pull something different from it. So, I mean, it's not just like I actually would put this in a lot of Future Diary, which was a death game. and Dead Man Wonderland, also kind of a death game.
Dead Man Wonderland wasn't kind of a death game.
It is. They're all death, and that's the thing. So if you really like death game animes that are very introspective, I think that's what is going to pull people into the series. I mean, for me, you know, our friend Kayla from Casually Kayla had told me about the series. And one night I'm like, let me just see what she's talking about. And no sooner did I watch the first episode, I'm like, oh my god, how did I not know about this?
And then you adjusted your glasses.
And then I adjusted my glasses and marathon.
But you're not a hipster.
But I'm not a hipster.
You so are a hipster.
And, but it had all those elements that we both love from Future Diary. The introspective, the assessment, what's really going on.
But don't you feel like you have to have those things if you're going to have a death game set up? I mean, if you have a death game set up where you don't have any kind of real character exposition or a character going through, why am I here and why is this happening to me? If you just have a death game for death game, there's no entertainment value.
But I think it's kind of hard because there are certain animes that don't outrightly come out and say, oh yeah, this is a death game anime, but it has the element of a death game anime,
like
Higurashi no Nokoro ni. And we all know that this is like my bread and butter right here, is that particular series. And that was not outrightly a death game. So one, death kept happening and repeating until the protagonist, because it was a short novel game, interactive game before it became a series. And if you do things right, do it the right way, death does not happen. But it itself is a game between all these gods. Same with the recent one that I played a while ago, the one on the island, who's Uma. I can't remember. It's like when the seagulls cry, and I can't remember its Japanese name.
That's okay.
That works. And it's the same thing. Not rightly, like, not put out there. Yeah, this is a death game. You have 3 days to figure out the mystery, or everybody dies.
But you do. You have 3 days to figure out the mystery, or everyone dies.
But there's no element of someone saying, oh, when you do this, you get... They don't tell you that in the game. You have to go through the game and figure it out for yourself as the player.
Right, but that doesn't... To me, that doesn't negate the fact of you still have to, in order to not have death happen, you've got a time limit and people are going to die, things are going to expire if you don't meet a certain clause. What I'm saying is, for me, for anime series, it's kind of hard, and at least I haven't experienced a death game type setup anime where you didn't have, at least on some level, character exposition, a character trying to figure out why they're there, why things are happening either to them or around them. That's kind of the standard setup in all of them. Like, if you look at Another, if you look at... I mean, it's not really a death game, but you look at something like a High School of the Dead.
The
or you look
in the
at
the number triggers the effect, which is the game.
You know, and but you look at it, again, adjust your glasses when you
I'm
say that.
I'm sorry, but
but you look, and then you look at Dead Man Wonderland, and you look at
Future
Diary. Future Diaries and Batum. You have this setup where you have some kind of exterior force that the player or the character has some kind of influence on, but not complete influence on, and death being an element of, if they don't do something, take some action, they or someone around them is going to die. You have to have, I think, in order to keep the series running in any way, shape, or form, you have to have some tropes that come into play. I mean, Gantz, to me, is a perfect example.
And that's a death game, too.
Is a death game. Mm-hmm. And
actually, there's a trick to that game, because no one ever wins.
Right. But, you know, you have that setup where you have to go through character exposition, and you have to have those tropes in order to make it interesting. If everyone was, you know, a pure heroistic type, then you have no gray, you have no intrigue, you have no interest, you have no reason for conflict. So I think, you know, it just comes back again to good story, whether or not the angle, the arc is death game versus just...
I think the first season of Batum was really a meet the character scenario, because they really don't even start addressing the game till the very end of the arc. So I think the second season of this series is really going to open up the rest of the game part of it, because now you kind of have met all of the characters.
The main players.
Yeah, because no real core character from the first season has died yet. And I'm stretching that out because there kind of was one, but he kind of had that come in really bad. And I really don't want to spoil it because I always get called for being a spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler-licious.
So I'm not going to say anything about that particular part of the first season.
But
obviously
really want
in the second season, to make this story really sit with people, people that we have grown connected to have to meet a demise. Because they're not all getting off the island. That's the whole point of this death game. You know, they should not. And there's nothing to say that once you get off the island, you don't get sent back.
Right.
Yeah, because they covered that in a few of the episodes.
So they let you know that, you know, you can come back here as many times if you don't get your shit together. Be a good person. Stop being an asshole or you'll get sent to this island.
Again, the Will Wheaton rule applies.
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
But yeah. So overall, I mean, the series was absolutely excellent. And I think it's a good way to merge anime and gaming, which I think we're seeing a lot with these new animes coming out, like Sword Art Online, and
I love
World
Sword
Only
Art.
God
I finished
knows.
That one.
Like, we're seeing a really good blending and bleeding between the two genres.
And I think that's because there are so many things that both genres have in common that it just makes sense. And I think that, you know, a big part of that is, you know, having so much success with a blending of genres in other places. You know, we've gotten some decent video game translating to movies. I'm hoping that some of the other ones that have been licensed will also be decent.
We'll see.
You know, we've talked about it before, of plenty of games that easily lend themselves to a screen transition, and whether that's big screen or little screen just depends on the history that you have. Like, when we started watching Sword Art...
You started watching it way before I did.
I did, and I made you watch because I told you to watch and you didn't.
I know, you were like, watch it. I'm like, I will.
And then one Saturday,
she's like, I'm putting it on, watch.
And you're going to sit here right now because I know you're too lazy to move and you're going to watch it. And then you fell in love with it.
I did.
You were right.
Yeah, Sword Art's one of my favorites right now, man.
And it's just, it's done so well. You know, it does not poke fun at the gaming genre. It doesn't shortchange game mechanics or really any of the real camaraderie type relationships that you can build in an MMO.
A great research team.
You know, they really did have a good team to pull out both the positive and negatives of the MMO, and by tying it to a death game, because originally it's tied to a death game.
Yep.
It really made sense, the relationship exposition that was done, the character development that was done, and ultimately the story that was told and how it was executed through the two arcs that are available right now. Because the light novels, I think there are, I want to say there's either 7 or 8 volumes of the light novels.
I thought I saw 8 in your
Well, the
library.
Volume, the volumes covered 3 full video games.
Yeah.
And the manga, or the anime's only covered 2. So
yeah.
Hopefully they do keep going with that, because I do want to see more of that.
Yeah, yeah. The third game is an interesting one. I'm reading that manga right now, and I think that it absolutely lends itself very well to being a fantastic, not only end to the series and visually something that I want to see anime-wise, but it, again, plays up the video game community aspect in a positive light, and it's more of us getting together to solve a mystery issue problem as opposed to, you know, player killing and just getting points and, you know, the game hog thing, and ultimately, just like the first two games, portrays gamers in a positive light. It shows the zealots, but as a whole, it is about the experience and the journey, and I think that's what I gravitated most to in Sword Art. And then on the back end, it's just beautifully done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the
now
artwork...
Now you know why I love MMO so much.
No.
Yes.
No.
Oh.
No.
That's an acquired taste, my dear.
No, no.
I didn't say it was for everyone.
You know.
Because it's not.
No, the community aspect I get, the working together as part of a team and strategy, absolutely get it. Got a lot of respect for it. You go to a dark place when you play MMOs.
I went to a dark place one time. Because I have not been back.
Diablo?
I didn't, not nearly as bad. That's not very
good. Wait. I'm not talking about qualifiers of as bad or not. Diablo?
No, because there's no community aspect to Diablo. It's now a single player game.
Now?
Co-op.
I'm talking your experiences.
No, Diablo, I did not have the same reaction to Diablo that I did to Warcraft. No.
And we're not going back to Warcraft.
No, we're not.
Because we're better than that.
I really wish you'd let this go. This was so many years ago.
Well, she's not in the know. She's just doing her best as a big sister.
I know, but it's been years,
I have to protect the family.
Like, I'm just saying.
I have to protect you from you.
I'm just saying.
It's my job. It's what I do. It's my role in life.
It's about the family honor.
It is about our honor.
I think we need to get
you
more
left
siblings.
Me at the club, dude. You left me at the club to check an auction, dude. In
yeah,
Vegas.
Well, because
dude in Vegas.
Okay, have you not heard the story, Zeno? Because she's told it several times.
I love telling the story because 6 years.
Tell me
show.
When you're not recording, so that way we don't take up too much of your hard drive space.
Oh, who cares about the hard drive? I got mad hard drive space. I'm just saying. She left me at the club, dude. We had bottle service. So I'm in the club in Vegas.
Yeah.
With your best friend.
I know.
Well, you're a good-looking woman. You should have no problem finding her.
I had no problem. That was not the issue. Okay? We get back.
I know. Oh, I make
it. And you're in a bathrobe checking auctions.
Yeah, I was in my nice, comfortable bathrobe checking my... Which I won. I won that
yeah,
auction.
Yeah, you had better had won it.
I did.
Leave me at the club. Anyway, so... I definitely have to finish it. I mean, it's in my queue right now on Crunchyroll.
And it's only 12 episodes, so it's not like a...
Right. Like, it's a mini marathon for me. Because, like I said, I got through the first episode, and I thought it was really interesting. The week that the first episode came out was the same week that Blast Tempest started. And I watched the first two episodes of that, and I was kind of giggling to myself because I was like, wow, there's a whole lot of blowing up, like... animes, literally, that have come out
blast,
in this blast.
Batoom, which is the sound that the bombs make.
Yeah, you know, and so Blast Tempest is one that I'll probably be talking about pretty soon, because I'm, like I said, I'm midway through it now. I'll probably finish it up by next week. It is interesting in that it is more on the fantasy side of the anime world, so it's more magic and, fighting going on. But the series that I just finished up that, one, surprised me, and two, is not typically the type of series that I would want to marathon and get through, is one that's actually a little bit older, that I hadn't heard about, which was called H2O, Footprints in the Sand. And so the way that it works is there's a kid named, Takuma Hirose, and he's blind. He wasn't born blind, but became blind. And as you go through the series, you find out why that happened. I'm going to let you guys know right now. I'm going to go through this whole series. I'm going to spoil the shit out of
it. Why don't you get called out for being a spoiler?
Because I always say before I start going into details that I'm about to spoil this shit. So if you don't want to hear about it, it's okay. You can skip to the end of the episode. I won't have any hard feelings if you stop this podcast right now, watch the series, and then come back for my thoughts and feelings. But I'm going to talk about everything that goes on in this one. Because I really enjoy it, and it's one of the few ones that I actually got to sit through most of with my husband. Which is fun, because not all of the series that I like to watch are...
Yeah, I know.
...are series that he actually can sit through, let alone will sit through with me, but he's a champ. So, H2O starts, and, you know, with the Footprints in the Sand reference, it does start off with a reference to the Footprints in the Sand parable of, you know, seeing two sets of footprints in the sand, and man is talking to God, and then, you know, gets to a point where there's only one set of footprints. And so they start that whole path off, and then they veer off into the story, and you meet Hirose, who always has a smile on his face, but again, is blind, and he's moving to the country to live with an uncle of his to go to school in a village where his family is from. His dad is having a really hard time, and isn't doing well and needs to focus on his health. His mother has passed away, so this uncle has volunteered to have him come move into this village. He's doing pretty well, so he moves there. Gets off his bus and is trying to make his way to his uncle. The uncle is more comic relief than anything. Very fun, gregarious, big, beefy, you know, again, comic relief. Usually has a couple minutes in every episode in one way or another. Overly affectionate.
Mm-hmm.
To the point of, because he has no kids, at times coming off really motherly. Like, Takuma is very self-sufficient, again, because he's been blind for a big chunk of his life. He's had to be, especially with his father's health failing.
It's like Ray Charles.
Yeah, kind of, but he doesn't play piano.
Right, but the whole learning how to live even
exactly.
Without it.
So, like, he doesn't need help getting up in the morning. He's actually up and out of the house to go to school before his uncle can make it to his room to wake him up, and so he gets pissed off because he comes in all the time going, Taki-kun! And then he's like, this is just not going to work. There's no boy should need help getting woken up for school. He's no fun. And so he gets all upset. But the way that he comes off, I think he's like a fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
And so Takuma makes his way to school. On his way, he bumps into a purple-haired, long-haired girl, knocks her over, and he's trying to feel her face to, you know,
does
recognize
he grab her. By accident?
Yeah, he does. Making his way down the body, she kind of looks at him really strange, knocks him around in the face. And then he explains that he's blind. She sees the stick, and she kind of feels bad
for kicking him in the face,
for punching him in the, to slapping him across the face a few times, and like knocking him on the ground again. So he explains that he's trying to make it to the school. She goes to the same school, and very coldly, she's like, "Look, I'll help you get to the school, but that's it. Once you get to the school, you're on your own. I don't care if you're blind." And he's like, "No, that's cool. That's really helpful. You don't even have to do that, but I really appreciate it." So she walks into the school, and literally, she gets into the front of the building. She drops her arm, and she walks away from him. And you think, wow, what a bitch. The way that you go through the series is you get to meet all of the, I'll say, co-protagonists of the story, because the setup is very much like a Diamond Daydreams in that each episode
I never saw Diamond
is focused on learning about a particular character through their relationship with Takuma, or the relationship that he develops with them.
So it's kind of like an anime Love Actually, with all these different plots that all intertwine at the very end with one pinnacle character?
Yes, with the exception of how they intertwine. So the way that it works is the raven hair, well, she's not really raven, it's purple, but the girl that he met that walked him into school is hated by the entirety of the village. Kids in the class call her a cockroach, the teacher doesn't intervene. She is always by herself at lunch. She chronically gets beat up by other girls and boys. And by beat up, I don't mean like just thrown to the ground. I mean like kicked in the head, punched in the gut by girls and guys that are in their same class. The classroom setup is you're somewhere in the sophomore, junior range of high school, I want to say. And so her name is Hayumi Kohinata. The teacher, after introducing Takuma and telling the class all about how he's blind and everything, several girls immediately take an interest in Takuma because, one, he's very cute. So you get a harem setup in that the majority of the class is female and the majority of the exposition of characters that you do are these various girls.
At least they never have to worry about him going for the prettiest one because he's blind.
Well, funny thing happens.
Oh, damn it.
So, and this is like in the first couple of episodes. So, Takuma is really a kind-hearted person. And as he's sitting there listening to how people talk or don't talk to Hayumi, who he ends up sitting next to in class, even though no one wants him to, really takes it upon himself to figure out why people are so mean to this one person, because it seems like everyone is. And it just doesn't seem fair to him. So he wants to do something, but he doesn't know what he can do. As he is trying to figure out what's going on, they share a cup of ramen. And she gives him one bite, because she doesn't really have a lot of ramen. And some of the other boys in class come to the place that she's hiding and seek her out. And take her out to beat her up. Takuma tries to help, but he falls because
right,
he's blind and he doesn't know the room. And she's like, look, you can't do anything. I don't even know what you're trying. Stop. Let's go and do this outside out back. So she goes and she catches an ass whooping. Takuma tries to make it out of the building. It doesn't happen. She gets her ass whooping, comes back to the school. Takuma's still trying to make it down these stairs, and he falls, and she catches him. She gets him to the door and walks away, and she's, like, limping and stuff and starts heading up towards the mountains. Takuma's trying to make it out of the building and bumps into this blonde-haired, really, really upbeat young girl who calls and reveals herself to be a time sound spirit.
Okay.
Named Otaha. And wants to help Takuma. He's like, you can't help me. I can't do anything. I'm just so useless. And she's like, no. It's not that you can't do anything. You just think that you can't. She goes, but I'll help you. So she kisses him on the forehead. And all of a sudden he opens his eyes. And he can see. And he goes back to his house. Lays down. Next day starts. He goes to school. And he can full on see. And no one makes a big deal about the fact that this once blind kid...
all of a sudden can see.
Can see. And for a minute, you're just like, hold on. Last night, he was blind.
But now he's not.
But today, he can see. And like your uncle who cries because he can't wake you up in the morning to get you to school because you can wake up by yourself, isn't like throwing a parade because all of a sudden you can see. Like, it struck me as odd. But they made one comment about him being able to see stuff, and they go on in the series.
Plot hole? Uh-huh.
As you start learning and going through the different episodes and meeting the different girls and learning their backgrounds and things like that, you realize that all of these families, because it's a small village, are intertwined.
I'm beginning to see a pattern.
And Hayumi's family was the most influential family in the village. They were mostly doctors. And they started holding the village hostage. At least the villagers felt that way, because people needed treatment as they were getting sick, and the Kohinata family would not treat anyone if they hadn't paid their bills. So a bunch of important and prevalent people in the village died. So many so that the villagers had resentment against the Kohinatas, and under the leadership of the Kagura family, mounted a revolt. Marched up, torches and everything, to the Kohinata family, and basically dispersed the family and burnt the house down to the ground.
Oh, boy.
Hayumi was the only Kohinata to end up staying in the village, because at the time she was, like, 5. And the villagers decided, well, we're not complete bastards, so we're not going to kill a kid, but we're not going to make life easy for you. So they banished her up to the mountains. So since she was 7, she's been living up in the mountains by herself, in, like, these 2 VW buses that are up on stilts that she put together and has basically made a home. So, like, she bathes in this little pond. She washes her clothes on a old school wash tub in the thing. Wow. She doesn't really have hot water. She has, like, 3 books to her name that she reads, and that's it. So everyone refuses to go up into the mountains because a demon lives up in the mountains. And Takuma's like, it's not a demon. It's just Kohinata. And he tries to bring this other girl who's befriended him, who's named Hinata. Who's very sweet and just seems absolutely keen on making Takuma her boyfriend for some reason. As you go through more of the episodes, you realize it's because her grandfather, who's the head of the Kagura family, who despises the Hinata family, who mounted the revolt, wants inroads with the Hirose family, because they're very influential in Tokyo, and so has made it the mission of his granddaughter to do, quote-unquote, whatever it takes to make Hirose hers. So he basically says, I don't care if you have to fuck him every day, make that guy your boyfriend. So she tries, but her heart's not really into it because she doesn't really, really like him.
Right.
It's just that her grandfather's making her do it. Her grandfather's really an asshole. Like, the one thing that you'll pull away from this entire series is that this dude is, like, a major asshole. Like, major. Major asshole. And so each episode builds, and all the stories basically are intertwined with the Kohinata family. So they're all woven through Hayumi. And eventually, Takuma, through his relationships as he gets to know these other girls and exposes them really to Hayumi, they learn that it's really not Hayami that they're upset with. It's the family, what the family did. And you can't hold her responsible, or they shouldn't hold her responsible or accountable
for
the sins of her parents and her parents' parents.
Right.
So that's how it goes along. And it's very deep. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get to this moment where you realize, huh, actually Takuma hasn't been able to see this entire time.
Oh, so he is still blind.
He's been blind the entire time.
So that's why no one thought it was a big deal.
Right. He was the only one who swore he could see.
Right.
And, like, he has this huge, like, a whole episode he has a breakdown. And he's like, no, 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 I'm telling you, I could see. Look, here's my notebook. I took notes in class because I could see. And he did. He had a notebook, but it's just all scribbles just all over the place, like, you know, a kindergartner had written in a notebook. Wow. And he's like, and when we had our class and we took that trip up and we were on the mountains drawing a picture of what we saw, it's like, I painted a picture while I was on the mountain. And he shows his uncle the scrapbook, and it's
not very
big. No. And so then he starts having this massive breakdown. And as you learn, the character of Otaha that he sees is actually Hinata's sister that had passed away. And it's not Hinata's sister, it's Hotaru's sister. So here's where the grandfather becomes a huge asshole. So the two girls were supposed to become the head, the old one, Hinata, was supposed to become the head of the Kagura family. There was an accident.
Okay.
Hinata drowned.
Oh, no.
She was the smarter, nicer one of the two girls, because Hotaru was really kind of introverted and all that kind of stuff. And so she was the bad Kagura sister. The grandfather and the other heads of the family had a conversation within earshot of Hotaru, going, we wish that Hotaru was the one that had died, not Hinata, because with Hotaru being the head of the family, we have nothing but worries. And so the grandfather's like, I have a solution. And so he grabs the girl by her hair and basically says, you're responsible for your sister dying, and the only way you can save the family is, from now on, you're going to be Hinata. You're not Hotaru. And you're going to do everything that she did, and you're going to be just as good, because Hotaru's the one who died. And she, like, has this... And she's only, like, maybe five or six at the time that this happens. And so... Before her sister had died, she'd become friends with Hayami Kohinata. She has a meltdown, chops off all her hair so she looks like her dead sister, and starts taking her name. So one of the episodes is her exposition of her going, I just want to be able to say my name out loud. The grandfather's like, you can never live as Hotaru. Hotaru died, and just in case you forgot. And he grabs her by her hair and drags her across the floor again to the shrine where her sister's photo is. And is like, you suck at life. You're going to be her. I don't want to hear about this again. And by the way, have you gotten the Hirose boy? Because that needs to happen.
Ooh.
Now. And so she has a breakdown. And then at the end, she goes to class because, as it turns out, the person that he has seen that he believes to be Otaha is actually the dead Hinata sister.
Okay.
Who has taken the name of Otaha because a picture book that Hotaru was drawing right before she died was about a time, sound, spirit. And so she had drawn this whole story about this kid who came to town, and he would be the person that would bring happiness and balance to the whole town because it'd be out of whack. And with the help of the time, sound, spirit that only he could see, things would get fixed. So basically the spirit of her dead sister has been helping... Hirose fix all the relationships in the town because of a story that the living sister drew when she was 6.
Wow, that's a little twisty.
Yeah, wrap your brain around all of that.
That's a little twisty.
Yeah, that's very As the World Turns right
it's,
there.
It's so soap opera-ish, but the way that it actually happens from episode to episode, it makes a lot of sense, and it's very intricate,
mm-hmm.
but there's just the right balance of fun and just the right balance of serious. But you get to a point at right around episode 6, you're like, this is not funny, and this is not, like, this is very serious, and this guy is an asshole, and why is he trying to shoot her? I don't understand. She didn't do anything. She wasn't even a doctor. She couldn't spell doctor properly, probably, at the point of time that her family was like this. Why did you drag her up the mountain to shoot her? I don't understand why you're such an angry asshole, Grandpa. Did you not get enough Metamucil?
Probably not.
You know, I'm like...
Being regular does kind of keep you sane.
It does. Like, a good BM can really kind of center you
for a
moment.
That's how you can tell if your day is going to be good.
Seriously. And so it's very deep. It's surprisingly deep. It very much reminds me, style-wise, of something that Clamp would do.
Okay.
Definitely sounds like Clamp. This, like, well, I know, I can't remember
this sounds
the,
like Tsubasa
Chronicles
Light.
Was it Clannad or something like that?
Yeah, it very much has a feel, and, you know, I loved Clannad, and I think that's one of the reasons why...
Oh, God, Clannad was so sad.
It was so sad.
The story was even sadder than the
Because it doesn't
one.
Really sound like this story has a resolution. It's just telling a story.
It is telling a story, and then there is a resolution, because there comes a point where basically as part of the breakdown that Hirose has, he ends up saving Kohinata from being shot, but he regresses back to being a kid, and he believes Kohinata to be his mom, so he's regressed to being six, and she decides that, you know, at least he needs her, so she would be okay with pretending to be his mom for a while, because doctors tell the uncle, look, if you try to force him back to the reality, he could regress even further and it do more harm. And so the family still has an apartment, basically the apartment that the family was living in previously. They've been keeping it up. And so he can't stay in the village. She says, look, I'll take care of him. And the uncle's like, the family's not going to give you anything because they hate your family. You know, basically Hirose's mom was supposed to marry into the Kohinata family, but she eloped with the guy that was his father, and so the Kohinatas hated them. The Hirose family believed that the reason why Taka's mom committed suicide by train was because of all the pressure the Kohinatas were putting on them, which came between the two of them romantically for a while, and she's like, look, it's the least that I can do. I love him. I'll be his mom. I don't have a problem working. I've been working and living all by myself since I was six. I can handle this and take care of him. So she does. She gets a paper route job. She's making enough money to support the two of them. And they're out walking one day, and she just breaks it down. She's like, you know, I don't know why you think your mom left you, that she committed suicide. And he's like, what are you talking about? You're my mom. And she lets go of his hand. She goes, you know I'm not. She goes, but I know you. She goes, and I know the type of person your mom would be. There's no way that your mother would leave you. And he starts having a headache. And he starts having a flashback. And in the flashback, he actually sees the truth. And Odaha appears to him. And she's like, I know it's really painful, but you have to stop chasing death. You have to embrace your mother for who she was. And the flashback plays all the way out. And they were walking and getting ready to hit the railroad crossing. And there was a kid who was chasing after a volleyball. And Taka's mother let go of his hand to chase the kid that was chasing after the volleyball. And she pushed him off of the tracks because the train was coming, but wasn't able to get off the tracks in time. But it was so traumatic for Takuma, he couldn't explain that that's what happened. And because the other kid left, everyone just assumed that she threw herself in front of the train and committed suicide. But she didn't. She was saving this other kid. It's revealed to him because a similar thing happens as Kohinata is having this conversation with him. Another kid starts heading towards the railroad tracks, and she lets go of his hand, and he starts screaming, and then he has the whole full vision, and he opens up at his eyes, and he's like, no! And you see the train, and you see Kohinata, and you're like, this is not how this episode is ending. Because it's the last episode, you're like, no, 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 no. Then they do a flash to, like, 10 years down the road, and you see all of the girls in the town grown up with their own children, and you see Hirose building a windmill on the side of this hill, and a conversation happens, and then it ends, and so you get a resolution. I'm not going to give away the whole resolution, even though I said I was going to spoil everything.
I mean, you spoiled but most of this series.
I went through the whole series. You get a resolution. It's not the resolution that you think.
Right.
It's kind of is a resolution that you want, but with no real explanation of how this resolution happens. And then you get the end credits. So I felt like they attempted to do Clannad and have a really deep story and have real deep character exposition and get you in there. And then they got up to the last episode and went, well, shit, if we're going to go down this path in the last episode,
why don't we just do a school day?
How in the hell are we going to...
How are we going to patch it? We're not.
Yeah, because right now this is, like, really, really sad. And like, well, there's only one way you could kind of make it happy, but it doesn't really kind of work. Oh, well, fuck it. And that's the ending that they throw in it. So I highly recommend that if you like a series that is deep, that has a lot of exposition.
If you like being sad.
That does. Because it is, for the most part, it is sad. I mean, like, every time poor Kohinata catches a beatdown, and she just takes it. And she got to the point, and she has, like, a whole episode about her. And she's like, look, my family was horrible. She goes, and a lot of people died. And, you know, all I can do is take your rage because it was the fault of my family. This is the only thing I can do for you. So do whatever you need to until you get it all out of your system. And she just takes, like, these savage beatdowns from people. And I'm just like, you poor thing. Why doesn't someone go, no, beating up a girl is wrong. Like, unless she killed him, but she didn't. Why are you kicking her in the head in the poor rice field in the rain? This is really sad. And then she just gets up and she, you know, shuffles off to her house, which is 2 VW Bugs. And in this episode, some other guys, because they're sure she's going to take revenge on the village, blowed it up. So she gets all the way back up the mountain, shuffling up the mountain with a twisted freaking ankle, bruised and bleeding. And they blew up her house. She got no house in the rain, beat up.
You sound really emotional.
It's just,
right now.
It's so sad. I'm sad. She takes out her pigtails.
Is this more sad than Lost Odyssey? Or?
Oh, no, God. I don't. No, I don't think that anything is more sad than Lost Odyssey.
No,
I don't think that's possible.
The Seth storyline of Lost Odyssey is probably still the saddest to me.
I think that's like the saddest thing on the planet. But this is really sad. This is very sad. And her favorite thing in the world is like windmills, and you're just like, she's got such a sweet spirit. Stop kicking her in the head.
I'm sorry, Ninja.
Just stop it.
I'm sorry.
You mean bastards? Don't kick her in the head. Don't kick her in the gut.
I'm sorry.
Why are you strangling her in the rice paddy? Let her go. Let her go. She just wants to be a person.
Happy Monday, everybody.
Happy Monday. So, yeah. That's what I've been watching. So now I have to go back and watch something like either Super Saccharin or probably go back to the hentai so I can at least like wash the stank of sadness off of me.
Well, I got two recommendations for you to cheer you up.
Yes.
Okay. Both of these have started recently. One's about 12 episodes in. The other's only two. I'll start with the shorter one. Mm-hmm. The shorter one, I think it may have been discussed in manga form, but now there is an anime called Aoi Sakai no Shushinde, which is The Center of the Blue World, which is a dramatization of the 90s console wars.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have a main character named Gear. Who a young man, he possesses the ability to run incredibly fast to fight with, you know, so he's got wild blue hair, you know, he's got a younger brother who's passed away in the wars. They don't really get to his name too much. I think his name is Till, but see here. And he's got a adopted little sister named Nell with purple hair and long pointy ears, wearing a purple costume. Yet very meek, but loves her older brother very dearly, you know. And when she does sport a weapon, she's got a claw on it. Some of you may already know what kind of character I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, everything in this series is an homage. So they decide to join the war effort for the Segwa Kingdom, fighting against the Nintendo Empire, who's run by a guy who rides around on a dragon. You know, it has a gigantic NES controller D-pad symbol on his armor, which is hilarious. But basically, this is just an homage to – this is literally a dramatization of that. So Gear, of course, represents Sonic, you know, as his running ability is great. Nell is Nai from Phantasy Star 2, you know, enhanced senses and stuff. There's a female archer named – where is her name again? I wrote this down here. Opal. She's supposedly the second strongest in the Segwa Special Forces. She's an archer, and she's the female. I know where. Okay, I didn't even clue in on that. Opal. She's an homage to Opa Opa from Fantasy Zone.
Okay.
Yes. So, and they're a class of warrior known as killers, mainly because they can absorb other people and absorb their abilities to make themselves stronger. They can only do it so many times, depending on who they are. But their abilities all represent genres, which I thought was very interesting, cool. The way they wrote that up. So Opa Opa is, of course, Fantasy Zone, which is a shooter. Mm-hmm. So her ability is shooting.
Right.
Let's see. There is a mercenary who joins the army. Where is his name? Named Tejirov, who is basically Tetris. He's he makes puzzles. So, but he also ends up as their trainer. But as a whole, the series is basically fan service-y as well as actually dramatizing the story. There was this one gigantic empire named the Arturia Empire who, in a conquest to conquer the world, hire many mercenaries from here and far, but they weren't really worried about quality. And so before they could take over the whole world, they fell apart. So the armies have adopted a method of quality over quantity. So every once in a while, one of the empires will hire one of these killer warriors because they're extremely good at one particular thing. It's just screaming, like, I'm waiting to see when Capcom's going to show up, waiting who's going to pick up Konami, you know, that type of thing. I'm interested to see how they wrote that into the whole thing. But so far, I've been enjoying it. Two episodes out so far. It's somewhat fan service-y. Borderline hentai. It's very rude and edgy, let's say that.
Rude and edgy works.
Everything about Tetris, the way he's training them, is basically a sexual gesture of some sort. I mean, round thing, like making the circle with the hand and using his finger to say, go in directly. Almost everything out of it, when he's talking about training characters or characters to do something, it's a reference to sex, so...
And where but can the series funny, though, be found?
On Crunchyroll.
Really?
Yeah, they got two episodes up there already. So the Aoi Sekai no Shushinde.
Got it.
There. Okay. The other one, where is that one again? I had it pull it up here. But, let me just pull it up real quick. See. This is basically just a straight comedy series, but it goes over the thing of gamers be interjected into their game in some real life circumstance. Mm-hmm. This one is the reverse of that, though. It's a gamer who gets pulled into the game, or in parallel universe that seems to mirror it. It's the Inexian Saga.
Okay.
Yeah, this one has about 12 to 13 episodes up already, but basically it's just a straight comedy. It's hilarious. I haven't seen one of this caliber in a long time. I mean, I've been watching Fairy Tail and Naruto and stuff, and they have their funny moments, but this one is going straight for the gusto. I mean, there's the main protagonist, Hokase Kon, he's playing a online game, and another avatar speaks to him and says he needs his help with something. You know, you say, oh, I'm a great warrior. I do this, that, and the other thing. I look just like my real avatar and everything else. He thinks for some reason that's an actual girl on the other side. But somehow they don't really go into it yet, but he gets pulled into a different dimension that seems to mirror the game. He falls into in the middle of a combat, between two armies, and he ends up being a guard of this princess who's destined to marry a older, prince of a rival country to unify it through marriage. She's like an 8-year-old girl, but she's incredibly rude, obnoxious.
Of course. Yeah.
But she sees a special power. She sees potential in him. So after he magically manages to land on the opposing army's leader and knock him out cold on his wheelie chair, she adopts him to be a honor guard knight of her team of four, which I thought was hilarious. I mean, it gets into it pretty quickly, but they – I'm almost saying he might be from a kingdom in the sky that's known for their heroes and the ability to use this special power that he can somehow harness. Let's see here. Also, of course, of having the large the large guardian of the princess who was there to getting ready to fight him and got saved. There's also a caretaker who's a, I think, if I'm, let me make sure I'm getting my terminology correctly. Oh, yeah, he's a transvestite.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, that yeah so every right time there. She says something cute, the octave of her voice drops like two. So it's hilarious. I can't stop laughing every time they do it. Because normally it's as if it was a very boyish character speaking very meekly, quite high-pitched. And then it jumps down like this when she sees something so cute. It's hilarious. I can't stop. It comes out of nowhere. I've seen up to 7 episodes so far of it. But there's so much stuff I can go into left and right to for teasers. Like, for instance, he manages to – there's a sword that he steals from the enemy called an Alma Gear that lets him harness his energy and use it in combat. And for some reason, when he uses it, he makes it into a gigantic hammer, which he uses on an opposing general and actually shatters one of his testicles.
Oh, wow. That, so forever, you are not kidding, so ever, about going for
ever the since
gusto.
After that, whenever he's walking, they show him start to lean to the right a little bit before he corrects. Then lean to the right, and then lean to the right, and then he tries to fight him again, but of course he's still off balance. But then he takes care of the other one in the other fight because now he knows how to use the Alma Gear practically. And then they show an episode after that from that general's side. He goes back to his fiance, and one of his guards drives him home because he's on medical leave to get better. And his fiance walks up, talks about how many kids they're going to have, and every time there's so much juxtaposition for them mentioning like the I forget what the word for testicle is in Japanese, but it keeps coming up in other words, and they keep playing sound effects every time they say it. He just gets more and more pissed off that he can't tell them exactly what happened. It's hilarious, man.
Yeah, I definitely need to watch that and cheer myself up. That's definitely got me written all over that.
And I think the last part I saw, there was a mysterious little creature that a sorceress who has an idea of what's going on sends to the party to meet up with the hero here, but he's for some reason he hates animals, but everybody else thinks the damn thing's so cute, including the main guard.
You gotta be careful about animals.
True, he's got a mini helmet on. He's intelligent, right? But he has like the creature's being kind, but he wants nothing to do with it. So the animal could care less about him too. So. Just he's all about, you know, we better not pick this guy up. We're not supposed to feed him. He's got to find food on his own. I mean, he's making a very valid argument, but everybody else wants to pick him up. It's like, are you ready to feed this thing until, you know, for the rest of your days? Are you going to take care of it? This, that, the other thing. And he keeps hinting to something that happened in his past, but he never actually says what it is. Like if he had a pet, didn't take care of it, and died or something.
Probably.
So that's why he's so adamant, you know? Yeah, but the pet ends up forcing its way anyway. He tries to fight it, and it's too agile, and it just, like, puts its nuts on his face, and he can't get it off. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah, this series has written all over.
You have me at nuts to the face.
Yeah, and this animal knows exactly what it's doing. It did it on purpose. So, yes, Ixion Saga DT. It's hilarious. It's so much slapstick and juxtaposition and play on words and everything else. I'm watching it sub Crunchyroll. If it ever does come out dubbed, I'd say don't do it because the way all the characters feel, it would be ruined. Just watch it as it is and enjoy it. And I think they're getting ready to release chapter 13 to free users. So yes, that's another one you can wash off the sad with.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think that should be your number one,
that's
going to
be my number one. That's right there, because I finished the last episode of H2O, and I was like, well, that fucking blowed. Like, I just need to go to bed and be held right now. So I'm going to wash the sad off, but I got to say, this has been a pretty successful anime episode.
Mm-hmm.
So check out some of the other stuff that we talk about, not just anime, although we do talk about anime, video games, gadgets, nerdery, music, movies, at our website, www.egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. Find other podcast episodes like the one that you're finishing listening to this moment at our homepage, www.electricsisterhood.com. Or if you want to use our short address, it is
ESH.co. That is ESH.co. short address will bounce to the long one. Check out any articles that are written within the week. All questions and comments should go to our Facebook page.
Facebook?
Facebook.com/Land of Esh. And oh yeah, this podcast, we do it.
That's right. Every single week, we do a podcast. Poppin' fresh for you. We put it out on Mondays for your enjoyment on our website, but you can also get it for your iOS device in either the iTunes podcast application on your iPhone, iPod Touch, or iPad. You can get it in the iTunes Music Store going to iTunes on your desktop, or using the Microsoft Store on your mobile device, Windows device, by searching for Electric Sisterhood and hitting the subscribe button. But if you don't want to do any of those things,
you can plug us into any RSS reader or any podcast search engine. But while looking for us, you should check out our friends, too.
That's right, because we put out brand new episodes typically every Monday, but we've got other homies that you should definitely check out the shows that they do. On Tuesdays, that's Boston Bass Brigade, which is co-hosted by our homeboy King Baby Duck. On Wednesday, it's Geek Aggro, which is held down by our homeboy Deuces Wild. And on Thursday, you got brand new episodes of the Issues program,
hosted
by the Issues Guy, telling you fun stuff. If you haven't heard anything by the Issues Guys yet, you gotta check it out. It is so much fun. We love having them as part of the family. So make sure that you check that stuff out. And for all your other nerd needs, keeping them satiated throughout the rest of the week, like Panda said, there's all the stuff that we write about on our site. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. You can hit us up at ESH News. Ask us questions. Find out about stuff that we're writing about. Event coverage. All kinds of awesome sauce on the interwebs. So it's that time. Since we have a guest with us, Zeno, I'm going to ask you, what shit you digging this week?
I've been playing the hell out of PlanetSide 2.
Really?
One is free to play. Two, I played the first PlanetSide and had a blast with it. Now you don't have to pay nothing for it, so why not? It's awesome.
Why not indeed? Panda, shit you digging this week?
I'm digging Cognition, of course.
Ah, that's right. You're finishing that one up.
Man, it's so good. Like, delicious burger good. Yeah, Without the calories.
We'll have to talk about that next week.
I don't know. There might actually be a review Monday.
What?
Today.
What?
Maybe right now.
What?
Maybe we don't know. Maybe you're reading it while you listen to this podcast.
It's a possibility.
Maybe, but let's not
get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you digging this week?
The new look and feel for our podcast page, electricsisterhood.com.
That's right.
And I'm not just saying that because I did it, but I did it.
She did it. Beep, beep, beep.
I mean, I'm not patting myself on the back, but pat. If you haven't checked it out, make sure that you do. We're really excited about the relaunch. I think it looks great, and it's just a fun way to dish out our podcast to you guys. So I hope that you check it out. We'd love your feedback. You can tell us about it on Facebook. Use the comments that are on the page. But I'm digging that.
Awesome.
So as always, I'm Ninja Sista.
I'm Pandalicious.
And I'm Xenocore.
And until next time.